A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. All right, so we start with some frustrating news from the Supreme Court. You know, we were talking about this last week. The Supreme Court considering more than three lawsuits, but basically three issues dealing with our right to keep and bear arms. You had multiple challenges to Illinois' gun and magazine ban under the Protect Illinois Communities Act. I think there are five lawsuits that were seeking certification from the Supreme Court. You also had a cert petition out of the Fourth Circuit with Maryland's ban on so-called assault weapons. That was Bianchi versus Brown. And then you had a third case, Srower versus New York City, which deals with permits or premises licenses for long guns, specifically the good moral character requirement that New York City has if you want to possess a rifle or a shotgun in your home. Now, the Supreme Court turned away Srower versus NYC today outright, rejected that cert petition. They rejected the cert petition for Bianchi versus Brown as well. But they took no action on the Illinois cases, which is curious, to say the least. Costas Moros, attorney with the California Rifle and Pistol Association, Michelle and Associates, says these cases, the Illinois cases, will be relisted unless they're being held for Rahimi, in which case they might be granted, vacated, and remanded back to the Seventh Circuit for further review. Moros added, it's also possible that the Illinois cases, too, will be denied, but someone is writing a concurrence or a dissent. Hopefully not, he says. Yeah, this is unusual. And again, I'm going to give you two scenarios here, the pessimistic case and the optimistic case. The pessimistic case is pretty easy. Right. The court turned down Srower versus NYC, turned down Bianchi versus Brown. They're going to turn down the Illinois cases as well. But as Moros suggests, maybe somebody is writing a concurrence as to why the case should not be granted cert, at least at this particular point in time. Or they're writing a dissent arguing that, no, the case should have been taken, even though there were not four votes to grant cert to the Illinois challenges. The optimistic case is that the Illinois cases are a little different than Bianchi versus Brown. Remember, none of these three issues, the Illinois gun ban, the Maryland gun ban, and New York City's good moral character clause, none of these lawsuits have actually been decided on the merits. Even though a couple of these lawsuits have been going on for, you know, I think all three of them actually have been going on for at least 2 years or close to it. We have not yet had a decision on the merits in any of these cases. So in Maryland, the Fourth Circuit had, before Bruin, decided that Maryland's gun ban was perfectly okay. That case was pending before the Supreme Court when the court issued its decision in Bruin in June of 2022. And it was one of four cases that the court GVR'd. They granted cert, they vacated the lower court decision, they remanded it back down to the Fourth Circuit for further review in light of their findings in Bruin. The Fourth Circuit, a three-judge panel, heard oral arguments in this case in December of 2022, but they had not reached a decision, at least they had not published a decision, when the Fourth Circuit announced that it was going to take Bianchi en banc. It wasn't going to wait for that three-judge panel to come out with this decision. Instead, it was going to assert its authority to, in essence, rehear the case before that decision had come out. Now, we've talked about this with Chuck Michelle. We've talked about this with Cody Wisniewski. That was an almost unprecedented move for the Fourth Circuit to make, and it is widely believed that the Fourth Circuit did that because the three-judge panel was going to issue a decision that was favorable to gun owners and unfavorable to the state of Maryland. And with the majority of the Fourth Circuit expressing at least some skepticism or downright hostility towards our right to keep and bear arms, the thinking goes that an en banc decision is going to uphold Maryland's law. So you could argue, that the Supreme Court may be waiting to see what the Fourth Circuit does here. That it has not viewed the Maryland case as particularly ripe because the Fourth Circuit has already announced its intent to issue a decision In which case, the case can then be appealed back up to the Supreme Court once the Fourth Circuit has had its say, even if it is a ruling that is not favorable to gun owners. Schrauer versus NYC, again, is an emergency application seeking to overturn a Second Circuit decision that denied an injunction against the New York City Good Moral Character Clause. I think this was always going to be a little bit of a long shot, again, just because of the preliminary nature of this case. Schrauer versus NYC, again, it's pretty early on. It hasn't been decided on the merits. Now, the same could be said for the Illinois cases, the cases that the Supreme Court did not take any action on today. But what makes the Seventh Circuit decision a little different, particularly from the Maryland case, both, again, dealing with bans on so-called assault weapons, but in the Illinois cases, you at least do have a decision from the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals on an injunction. Again, we still don't have that any of those cases decided on the merits. A U.S. district judge in Illinois blocked the Protect Illinois Communities Act gun ban provisions and magazine ban provisions from taking effect, but the Seventh Circuit overturned that decision and allowed the law to take effect. And in doing so, the Seventh Circuit three-judge panel, Judge Frank Easterbrook, I believe was in the majority on that, writing for the majority, said that, AR-15s aren't protected by the Second Amendment. In fact, none of the arms that are defined by Illinois law as quote-unquote assault weapons are protected by the Second Amendment, because the Second Amendment doesn't protect machine guns, and AR-15s are like machine guns. They are unusually dangerous, according to the Seventh Circuit panel. So that case has progressed a little bit further than Bianchi versus Brown. I won't say that it's progressed any further than Schrauer versus NYC, but it has progressed a little bit further than the other gun ban case that was pending before the court. And it also has, I think, a broader application and a broader impact than Schrauer versus NYC, which does impact millions of New York City residents, right? But the Illinois gun ban in question, or in fact, so-called assault bans in question, you know, those are in place in 10, 11 states around the country right now. So we are talking, including, you know, very populous states like California, New York. So we're talking about a much bigger body of gun owners who are potentially impacted by a quote-unquote assault weapons ban. So the optimistic case is that there is something different about these Illinois cases, that it is a little bit further on in the judicial proceedings, that it is maybe a little more ripe for review from the Supreme Court, and that maybe this will be the vehicle that the court will take while pushing aside Bianchi versus Brown. Now, do I believe that is what's happening here? No, I don't believe it. I don't know what to believe. I know what I hope. I know what I would like to see happen. But unfortunately, again, since the Bruin decision came down in June of 2022, the Supreme Court has taken several cases at the government's request, right, including the ban on bump stocks, including the Rahimi case. But it has not taken a single case that has come before it by gun owners or Second Amendment organizations. We heard in the first few months after Bruin, the first time that a case came up, I think it was Antonyuk, and the court denied granting cert to that challenge, basically saying it's too early. We want to see how the lower courts are fleshing out what we had to say in Bruin and how they are applying what we had to say in Bruin. But there was a dissent, I believe it was by Justice Alito, basically indicated, you know, we're paying attention to this, and if we need to step in, we will. Well, to date, that hasn't happened. And we have seen some pretty flagrant abuses by the lower court when it comes to our right to keep and bear arms, including the Seventh Circuit's decision that the most commonly sold rifles in the country today are not protected by the text, the history, and the tradition of the Second Amendment and the right to keep and bear arms. Again, am I confident that the court is going to take the Illinois cases? I am not. Is it a guarantee, though, that those cases are going to be turned away? It is not. As Costas Moro said, the court will reconsider the Illinois cases in conference this week. Next Monday is Memorial Day, so they will not be releasing orders next Monday, but next Tuesday they'll be releasing the orders from this week's conference. It is possible that they hold on to these cases again. It's possible that they hold on to these cases until after Rahimi is decided, and then maybe they will GVR the Illinois cases back down to the Seventh Circuit for further review in light of what they said in Rahimi. It is possible that the court will grant cert to the Illinois cases either next week or at a conference in the future. Again, because this case is a little bit further along than the Fourth Circuit. It is possible, though, again, that they are someone is writing a dissent or a concurrence and that these cases, too, will be dismissed either next week, you know, or at some point before the court adjourns in June. If that worst case scenario happens and all of these cases are rejected by the Supreme Court, that's not the end of the story. Again, none of these cases have been decided on the merits. So these are sort of a preemptory challenge to these laws, trying to get the court to take the issue up sooner rather than later, again, because of the stakes involved. But if the court decides to act on court time, right, and well, it's still not ripe for review, that doesn't mean that it's the end of the story. Bianchi versus Brown, for example, as soon as the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals en banc releases its decision in Bianchi versus Brown, the losing side is going to appeal to the Supreme Court, and then it will be ripe for review, unless that Fourth Circuit en banc says, you know what, we can't decide. So even though we've stalled the three-judge panel for over a year, and now we granted cert, or now we agreed to hear this case en banc, and we're going to take several more months to hear this case, they could decide to kick it down to the district court level. They actually could say, you know what, we can't make this determination. We got to start at step one again, and we're going to send this case back down, which, again, would add years of delay to this case. But the case would still be alive. Again, that would not be my preferred outcome. But it wouldn't surprise me, given the games that we've seen from the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. And that ultimately is what is so frustrating about the court's inaction today, is that we know that there are justices on the court who have said that they're frustrated by the continued misreading of the text history and tradition test, by the continued treatment of the Second Amendment as a second-class right by lower courts. But we don't have four justices, apparently, who are willing and ready to put a stop to these abuses. Even if it means one of these cases have to, you know, sort of cut in line, so to speak. And it is legitimately frustrating that, you know, we've had these justices say one thing, and yet the court has basically stood by and allowed these abuses to continue. I am not writing off the Illinois cases yet, but I am not particularly confident that the court is going to grant review. I hope that I am wrong. I really do. And I will be more than happy to eat crow if that is the fact next week and the Supreme Court announces that it is going to take these Illinois cases. But for the moment, the court is silent. It was a very curious decision from the court today. Keep hope alive, but I would say temper your expectations as well when it comes to the court granting a quick review of a ban on so-called assault weapons. All right, before we turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for just a moment. At the very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred, free speech. It's the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish. Yet in today's digital age, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives, leaving many feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. This is where Wealth Protection Research steps in. Armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Wealth Protection Research tirelessly seeks out financial experts. Those are the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report. This free report highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas that the mainstream media won't touch, and listeners can get it absolutely free. Just text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, then act now. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 Election Protection Report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas that the establishment doesn't think you can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right, so in today's recidivist report, we will turn to the Lone Star State of Texas, where a Killeen man has been sentenced to 20 days in jail after a domestic assault with a knife. That's it. Just 3 weeks in jail. Oh, and some probation time. Believe it or not, that's actually not the only unbelievable story from Killeen, Texas. The Killeen Daily Herald reports that Tyrone Rex Campbell, taken into custody after this hearing last Wednesday to serve his 20 days in jail. The judge who presided over the 264th Judicial District Court said that Rex Campbell should not get any credit for time served. So he'll have to do the full 20 days behind bars. He also was sentenced to 8 years of deferred probation. He was indicted by a grand jury last June on a second degree felony charge of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He ended up taking a guilty plea back in February. It was June 11th of last year. Two Killeen officers reported a domestic disturbance where they found a woman who was crying, had a visible 2 to 3 inch lump on her forehead. She told officers that she had been assaulted, described being dragged by her hair, having her underwear ripped off, being struck in the head with a laptop computer. She also described her assailant strangling her, holding a knife against her throat and stomach, threatening to kill her, and stabbing the air mattress that she was lying on with the knife. Woman was initially reluctant to identify her attacker, but did ultimately identify him as Rex Campbell. She also indicated that she had been assaulted by Rex Campbell the week before. When officers spoke to Rex Campbell, they were given permission to search the room where the attack had occurred. They found a torn pair of women's underwear, a strand of braided hair lying on the floor in that room. They also observed a deflated mattress with a cut in it and a knife lying on the ground next to the bed and a heavily damaged laptop computer on top of the mattress. When Rex Campbell spoke to police, he was asked what happened, and he said, according to an affidavit, quote, "I'm pretty sure everything she said happened is what happened." So he basically admitted it. He said he wasn't trying to actually stab her. He was just trying to scare her. But he did acknowledge that he lost his temper, had hit her with a laptop computer, had strangled her. And again, 20 days in the county jail. That's it. That to me seems like such an unbelievably light sentence for a violent felony crime. But as the Killeen Daily Herald reports, an unrelated case decided in the same courtroom saw an individual who had pleaded guilty to stalking also get probation. 27-year-old Dustin Paul Bartholomew was granted 6 years of deferred adjudication probation. He was also ordered to serve 20 days in the Bell County Jail, part of the county's work release program. Bartholomew indicted on a third-degree felony charge of stalking back in 2021. Police said that Bartholomew harassed a person by following her, watching their residence, leaving unwanted presents. The indictment alleges that Bartholomew had a dating relationship with the victim, that he engaged in conduct that caused her to be, quote, placed in fear of bodily death or injury or feel harassed, annoyed, alarmed, abused, tormented, embarrassed, or offended. But despite the stalking, Mr. Bartholomew will spend just a few weeks behind bars before he, too, is on probation, this time for 6 years. All right, today's armed citizen story from Ohio, where a Franklin County jury found that a woman acted in self-defense in a shooting outside of a home. This is at least the second time in, I think, 3 weeks that prosecutors have brought a case there in Columbus, Ohio, only to have a jury reject their charges and find that the individual is acting in self-defense. Jalen Davis, on trial for two counts of felonious assault. The incident happened in January of 2023 after another woman went to a home on West State Street. That's where Jalen Davis and a male friend were. The woman was apparently looking for the man who she shares a child with. And then she tried to force her way into the home. Now, it's, again, one thing you want to check and see where your, you know, kid's dad is or mom. But that doesn't give you the right to go somewhere where you're not invited. Davis's attorney said the woman and Davis got into a physical fight that resulted in more than a dozen braids being ripped from Davis's hair. During the fight, Davis was able to retrieve a handgun, fired at the woman, striking her in the head and in the leg. The bullet that struck the woman in the head did not penetrate her skull. She survived her injuries. Prosecutors argue that Davis had shot the woman because she was upset over the mutually known male friend. But Davis's attorney argued at the trial that the shooting was in self-defense. Again, she was being attacked. She had her hair ripped out. Who knew where that was going to lead? She was in fear for her life. She got a gun and she used it. And again, the jury agreed with the defense that this was not an aggressive act, but this was a defensive use of a firearm. In fact, the jury only deliberated for about 2 hours before it reached its verdict and acquitted Jalynn Davis of felonious assault there in Franklin County, Ohio. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A couple of off-duty firefighters in Massachusetts were able to make a pretty big save at a hockey game, not stopping a puck from getting into the net, but saving the life of a man who suffered cardiac arrest. This was a, you know, adult league, just an amateur hockey league in Duxbury, Massachusetts. Scott Hill and Braintree firefighter Brian Oriola were there last Wednesday night when they saw the player become responsive during a game at the Hobomok Arena. During a game on May 15th, there was a man who became unresponsive, went into cardiac arrest. Hill and Oriola began performing CPR. They were able to revive the man with an automated external defibrillator. Man taken to a local hospital. The deputy fire chief in Duxbury, Brian Monahan, said on Facebook, the successful outcome illustrates the importance of the American Heart Association's chain of survival. Immediately call 911, immediate CPR, use of an on-site AED, all played a successful role in this case. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Scott Hill, Brian Oriola off duty, but still able to put their expertise to work and to save a life there at the hockey game in Duxbury, Massachusetts last week. We thank you for your very, very good deed. Now, listen, I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Today, not only a big day at the Supreme Court, although not as big as I would have liked, but it is a big day for the NRA as well. You've got the NRA board meetings taking place in Dallas. I had a piece at Bearing Arms earlier today about the members' meeting, where it looked like the reformers were out in force. That is good to see. We will have much more for you on the NRA board meeting on tomorrow's Bearing Arms Cam and Company. What is the future of the NRA going to be? A lot of that may be decided at today's board meeting, including who the next executive vice president is going to be, or at least what the process of selecting the next EVP will be. What about a potential move to the state of Texas? What about the state of the NRA's finances? Again, there are a lot of questions that are swirling around this board meeting. Hopefully, we're going to get some answers today and we'll be able to bring them to you tomorrow. But I would encourage you to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We are keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all around the nation. And if you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member as well. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code SAVEAMERICA and you can get a significant savings on your VIP or VIP Gold membership. You'll get exclusive content and ad-free experience, the ability to comment on stories, but you will also be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms. And for that, I thank you, because in this day and age of big tech censorship, media bias that is just running rampant, it is so critically important that we get pro-Second Amendment voices out there. And you have played a major role when you become a VIP or VIP Gold member. So thank you again. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. This as well as a Monday can be enjoyed. And we'll see you back here tomorrow for 2A Tuesday. Until then, be well. Be safe. And be free.